Presenting Ornament, a Dresden Files fanfiction set between Proven Guilty and Small Favor, written by Devil Inside Her, read by Ozek. Lillian Shi gives Harry a beautiful glass Christmas ornament as a token of her regards during the holiday season. A series of minor disasters ensue as Harry is reminded all too late that gifts from the Shi are rarely simple or pleasant.
Will you be coming over for dinner, Harry?
This had been a regular question for as long as I'd known Michael Carpenter. He made it clear that there was always a seat for me at their table if I wanted one, and I usually had little to no problem in taking him up on it. I could handle the stony glares of Charity and the ruckus caused by their brood, but this time of year was one time I hesitated, and my answer was usually the same.
Sorry, Michael, but I think I'm going to take a pass.
Michael knew better than to ask why. He resettled the sword belt that held Amarakius in its scabbard on his back, and gave me a pat on the shoulder.
As always, thank you for your help. Remember that my door is open if you change your mind.
I watched him walk away through the swirling snow towards his truck, then made my way back to the Beetle. I slid into the driver's seat, the springs creaking comfortingly under my weight, and set the paper bag I'd carried on the passenger side. The bag held a pouch of potent catnip and several tattered paperback romance novels. The first being a tribute for the overlarge Tomcat, which grudgingly allowed me to share his domain. The rest was for the spirit of information who currently occupies a skull on a shelf in my workshop. I know that he gets some kind of illicit thrill from the juicier parts of the novels, but I've long since learned not to ask just what he likes about them. After settling myself in my cargo, I put the key into the ignition and turned it. The Beetle's stalwart engine was silent. I tried again and got the same result.
Damn it!
The parking lot around me was empty and quiet. The only other trace of human presence was a place where Michael had parked his truck, and even that would disappear soon under the falling snow. To the best of my knowledge, the nearest payphone was 4 blocks away. I heard a delicate tap on the glass of the driver's side window.
"Having trouble, are we?"
The voice made me almost jump out of my skin. As it was, I settled for almost banging my head on the roof of the Beetle.
"Leah, double damn it."
I cranked the window down and scowled up at her.
"Is there something you need?"
Lillian Shi chuckled. The rippling warmth of her voice would be enough to stir baser longings in the minds of simpler men, but I knew what kind of creature Leah was and what she was capable of doing.
"Is that any way to greet your godmother? I simply wish to check on you and, if needed, to render aid. This is, after all, a charitable season, is it not?"
I muttered something decidedly not charitable under my breath. It was already cold and seemed to be growing colder by the minute, a fact to which my godmother seemed blissfully oblivious. Being one of the high she of the winter court, the climate in Chicago in December was a matter that didn't concern Leah, like many other things.
"Your definition of charity always has strings attached, Leah. Now, unless you have real business with me, I'm sure that there are more pressing things on your schedule."
"Just as I'm sure there are on yours."
Leah raised her eyebrow in challenge.
"In that case, allow me to present a token of my good wishes to you."
"If it's all the same to you, no thanks."
I knew better by now than to accept any kind of token from any of the Shi.
"I know what it's like to have the good wishes of the Shi. If you want to give me a gift, just get going and leave me in peace."
"After all that we've been through, you doubt me." Leah smiled. "You may have my word, my godson, that this token will cause no injury to you or anyone connected to you."
Despite Leah's assurances, I still felt dubious.
"Are you sure about that? No curses, no hidden nasty that'll come back to bite me later?"
I could see a sharp edge to Leah's smile, though her expression did not budge in its seeming pleasantness.
"None. It is simply a symbol of my regard for you."
Maybe it was fatigue, or maybe it was the cold numbing my brain. But I sighed and said,
"Okay, fine, just get on with it. I've got a payphone to find."
Leah reached into one of the voluminous sleeves of her gown and withdrew what looked like a simple glass globe, which she then handed to me. Upon close examination, I saw that there was a cloth loop on the top and that the globe, filled with swirling, faintly glowing snowflakes in a microcosm of the weather around me, was in fact an ornament.
A Christmas tree ornament, Leah? What makes you think that I put up decorations?
If you do not, then perhaps you know someone else who might appreciate it. As for your other troubles, she snapped her fingers, perhaps your conveyance will be slightly more cooperative now. May the season find you well, godson.
Then the Lianshi was gone as soon as she'd appeared. I gave the key one more experimental turn in the ignition, bracing myself for a cold slog through the deepening night to a payphone. But to my pleased surprise, the beetle sputtered and coughed and grumbled to life. I put the globe in the paper bag, along with my gifts for Mr. and Bob, and then drove home without giving it too much further thought. Perhaps sensing that I bore a delightful gift for him, Mr.'s greeting when I made my way into my apartment was much more enthusiastic than usual. I nearly lost my balance as the great tomcat slammed into my legs, but quickly righted myself before I could drop my present for the fourth occupant of my home on the floor. I kicked the door shut and replaced the wards, then set the gift in question down so that its recipient could receive it and judge its worthiness. Mister gave the bone a disdainful sniff and batted at it, hoping to knock it away. Though the feline was large, he lacked sufficient mass to accomplish his goal, and he stalked away with a low rowl of disappointment. I do not know the provenance of the bone, and suspected it to have once belonged to a primeval creature of some great size. It had since been treated with a savory coating in order to make it more palatable to canines, and it was for a canine of similar gigantitude that I had acquired the bone. This canine now rose with an amiable woof from where he had been sleeping near the dormant fireplace, and trotted over to investigate my offering. Mouse spent the next few moments sniffing over the bone with deep woofing breaths of interest before giving me a big doggy grin and settling down to gnaw on his treat. I next pulled out the pouch of catnip from the paper bag and put it where Mister could easily find it. The tomcat, like me, had little like for the sentimental trappings of this holiday, and usually avoided what he deemed to be my feeble offerings. That left the novels. I peeled back the rug that covered the hatch which led down to the sub-basement and made my way down the ladder. I lit a few candles to illuminate the space, not intending to be down there for long.
Bob, wake up!
And to think I was looking forward to night to myself. Lights flickered in the sockets of the skull on the shelf. What mundane, boring task do you have for me tonight, oh great wizard?
I reached into the bag and pulled out one of the novels, flourishing it where the spirit could see.
Nothing, believe it or not, just some new reading material.
Bob lacked the flesh to make the expression complete, but I got the distinct impression that he was giving me a side glance with his eyes narrowed.
Are you trying to curry favor with me? You never give me a book without some kind of baggage.
No baggage. I'm feeling charitable for once.
I put the book on the shelf with others like it and turned to leave.
Good night, Bob.
Hold up. No stories of daring do for me. You look suspiciously uninjured, so I'm guessing the job went well.
Just a bunch of pixies wreaking havoc on people's yard displays, that's all. No daring do.
Bob let out a disappointed sigh.
Why can't you let good enough alone, Harry? You know as well as I do that those giant inflatable Santas are just plain tasteless.
It was a favor for a friend, that's all.
Then what's with the face? Not like your GQ material to begin with, but even I can tell when something's up.
It was then that I remembered the ornament. I pulled it out of the bag and held it up for the spirit to see.
Bob let out an astonished whistle. That's nice, Harry. What did you have to do to get that?
I frowned as I looked at the globe.
Nothing, and that's what bugs me. Can you sense anything wrong with it?
The lights in the skull flickered as Bob examined the sphere. Nothing that I can tell. Who did it come from? I snorted.
Take a wild guess.
Lacking any suitable place to display it, I left Leah's ornament on a bookshelf where I could figure out what to do with it later. I lit a fire, kicked my boots off, and then flopped down on the couch with a well-thumbed Western from my collection and a chilled bottle of Mac's Finest. Mouse contentedly gnawed on his dinosaur bone, and Mister made himself comfortable in front of the fireplace. It was a rare night of quiet, and I was determined to enjoy it to the best of my ability. I nodded off in that comfortable cocoon, only waking up when the fire had died down to embers. After disposing of the bottle in the kitchen, I lumbered off to bed. It took me slightly longer than usual to clear the steps of the boarding house of snow, but it was a task that I undertook without complaint. After all, Mrs. Spunklecreef put up with a lot from me, and it was the least I could do. I also had a sneaking suspicion that work would be scarce between the weather and the holiday, and that nobody would miss me if I showed up to the office a little bit late. As it turned out, my suspicion was right. I closed up shop at lunchtime and returned home to my apartment. If the strength of the pine bough scent was any indication, my cleaning service had just departed. I walked Mouse, who seemed pleased but puzzled by my early return, and then paid my regards to the lord of the house, who lounged in a catnip-induced narcoleptic state by the fireplace. Then I saw the ornament where I'd left it on the shelf the night before, and I decided to give in to my nagging curiosity about it.
"Don't let him burn the place down,"
I said to Mouse, gesturing at Mister.
"I'll be in my lab."
Bob came to life as soon as I descended the ladder. The skull's naturally toothy grin seemed unusually pleased, and I didn't know if this was something that I should be worried about or not.
"My esteemed Mr. Dresden, I salute you on your choice of reading material."
"That good, huh?"
I pulled my robe a little bit tighter. While the laboratory was usually chilly, it felt even more so today.
"Please, spare me the details."
"Knowing how tightly wound you are, I know that such riches would be wasted."
The teeth of the skull clicked together with a salacious snap.
"In return for your magnanimity, I have decided that I will help you with one research project of your choosing."
I set the ornament down on my work table. The snow inside continued to whirl in slow, lazy eddies.
"That. Something about that is bugging me."
"Perfectly reasonable, considering that the wench who gave it to you spent a significant portion of your adult life wanting to turn you into one of her dogs."
"So what do you think, then? The usual tests?"
Bring out the iron."
The globe didn't react to the most cursory of examinations, and I was about ready to bring out the big guns when my focus was broken by a frigid drop of water falling with a moist splat on the back of my neck. I let out a startled yelp and slapped my hand on my neck, then scowled up at the ceiling from whence the drip had come. Sure enough, one of the pipes above was dripping. I knew that the plumbing in Mrs. Spunklecreef's boarding house was ancient, and from the looks of it, little had been done to make accommodation for modern comforts. With that in mind, I'd done my best to place as little strain on the pipes as possible, tried to remember to leave a faucet or two running so that the cast iron wouldn't burst. But apparently, despite my best efforts, one pipe had frozen and burst, and that pipe ran right over my workbench. Fortunately for me, though, I'd worked on an arsenal of various anti-ice spells following my incursion into Arctis Tor. I extended a tiny thread of my will toward the pipe.
"Resarcius."
The pipe resealed with a groan.
"Calphosius."
The second spell was a milder evocation, a more gentle thawing instead of an outright fireball. While the boarding house had survived all of Chicago's fires up until this point, I saw no reason to break that streak. I was rewarded with a quiet gurgle of restored water flow.
"Never hurts to be prepared," I muttered. "But then again, I never thought I'd need this for my own apartment. Now, where were we?"
"You were just about to go for the uranium," Bob said. I'd be careful if I were you, though. You're running kind of low on that, and it wasn't exactly easy to get a hold of it in the first place.
Bob was referring, of course, to the small box tucked away on a shelf in my laboratory, which contained a small portion of depleted uranium. In addition to its mundane properties, it had certain arcane uses as well, and I thought it a smart idea at the time to lay in a limited supply. Mundane law enforcement agencies had a rather dim view of shady characters such as myself trying to acquire it, though, so I'd had to regulate my usage.
Yeah, I know. I promise I'll go easy.
But I was not to achieve this either, as a low, almost subterranean-sounding noise next intruded on the edges of my attention. It took me a moment to register this as Mouse's warning bark. He'd used this once before to save the residents of a burning building, and hearing him like this made the hair on my arms prickle in alarm. I gave the glass globe one last glare and moved for the hatch again.
Be back in a minute, Bob.
The skull sighed.
Yeah, that's what you always say.
Smoke choked the main living space of my apartment. I ducked back down to the sub-basement for a moment to catch my breath and my thoughts, then ascended again. My first thought was to open up the front door so that the smoke could escape faster. And with defenses at the ready, I waded through the murk and pried the door open.
Ventus! Ventus servitus!
I called the wind to me and pushed the smoke out the open door. Mister shot out from under the couch in a gray blur and vanished out into the open air. Mouse took up a post by the door while I searched the living room for the source of the smoke.
I thought I told you not to let him burn the place down,
I grumbled at the dog.
That'll teach me to leave him alone with medical-grade nip.
Mouse woofed once in solemn agreement. Fortunately, I could find no major sources of conflagration in the apartment. The fire that I'd left going in the fireplace had burned down to embers. I extinguished it, just to be safe, and then on a hunch, reached up into the chimney with the fireplace poker. The sharp end of the metal clanked on something solid, causing flakes of ice to fall and sizzle into steam on the remains of the fire. A few more exploratory pokes showed the blockage to be total.
Frozen pipes, I get, but a frozen chimney. What gives?
Mouse made a puzzled grumble but remained vigilant at his post by the door. In between the fireplace poker and a few well-directed fire spells, it took me a good 10 minutes or so to clear the ice block. Mister made his return at that point, liberally caked in wet powder like someone had tossed him headfirst into a snowdrift. He stalked in past Mouse with aggrieved dignity and arranged himself in his usual spot by the fireplace, giving me a pointed look as if he blamed me personally for his current state of damp.
I'll take that as no comment, I said to the tomcat.
With the chimney unblocked and the room largely cleared of smoke, I closed the front door again and used what fuel I had left to start a fresh fire in the hearth. I took a moment to thaw myself out, and would have lingered longer had I not heard the shriek of rending metal and what could only be Bob shouting for my attention from the laboratory.
What now?
I hissed under my breath.
Hey, boss man, I don't mean to panic you, but...
The lights in the skull's eye sockets flicked upward to the pipe. The leak of earlier remained patched, but a larger one had sprung and water now sluiced down in a cascade over my workbench. Little Chicago stood under a sizable puddle. It took a more significant investment of will to restore the pipe and stop the flooding, and further extension to dry out my laboratory from the inundation.
So, what was the deal upstairs? Bob asked. Hell of a lot of smoke.
Ice block in the chimney.
I put both hands on the workbench and glared at the glass globe. It didn't react, only lay there in silence with the snow sparkling within.
Mister got out while I was clearing the smoke, and I think someone went after him. He's safe, just soaking wet.
I think it's a safe bet that Leah's little gift is behind this. Why don't you just go after it with a sledgehammer and call it a day?
Don't think I haven't considered it. But who knows what kind of nasty it'd unleash if I cracked this thing open.
I drummed my fingers on the workbench.
Knowing Leah, I'd probably wind up burying this whole place in a 10-foot snowdrift.
Bob was silent for a minute after that. This was unusual for him, and it bothered me.
You know, I'd like to give you some kind of credit for intelligence, but you've really gone and screwed the pooch this time.
While none of the workings I'd done that day thus far were that complicated on their own, their combined effect and the stress of the day were starting to wear on me, and I was in no mood for Bob's snark.
Just get to the point.
You said that this was a token of Leah's regard for you, right? Did you ask her whether or not it was safe?
Yeah, I did.
Did you really, really ask her?
Bob didn't even give me a chance to answer before continuing on.
I'll take that as a no. You put a world of hurt on the heart of Winter, and you expect them to have warm fuzzies about it. Think with your upstairs brain for a minute.
But she said that it wouldn't harm me or anyone connected to me.
Bob made a disgusted sound.
Sure. Fine. Nobody's been hurt. But that doesn't mean that she can't annoy the crap out of you. It's hammer time, Harry. Plain and simple.
If I have that song stuck in my head, I'm blaming you.
I heaved a sigh to clear my thoughts, and then picked up the globe.
Then again, that wouldn't be the worst thing that's happened today.
I put the globe on the floor of the laboratory within the confines of the copper circle. A quick tap of the circle to invest it with energy ensured that the worst of whatever was inside that glass wouldn't spill out. I thought over my plan of attack for a moment, trying to cover all angles so I could render the thing harmless without blowing a smoking crater in my laboratory floor. Certain things just couldn't be covered by security deposits, and I'm pretty sure that was one of them.
First, something to dispel whatever malicious intents on the surface. And then, kaplow.
Please tell me that's not the actual spell, Bob muttered. Because if this wipes us both out, I don't want the last words I hear from you to be kaplow.
Of course not.
I turned my complete attention to the contents of the circle and extended my will.
Dispiderus!
A quick inhale and exhale, then a change in focus.
Discutius!
I'm not sure when I realized that I'd squeezed my eyes shut, bracing for catastrophe. Probably at the same time that I realized I'd been holding my breath, now that I think about it. I opened my eyes again, not sure what I'd see. A jolt of disappointment soured my stomach when I saw that the globe remained intact in the middle of the circle.
I'm guessing one of two things happened, said Bob. Either that weird sundering spell that you just threw out worked in some way you can't detect and we're safe, or it was utter garbage and we're back to square one. You want to bet which one it was?
I ignored the spirit and went for one of the bins, one which I knew contained cold iron shavings. I took a pinch of shavings from the bin and tossed it over the circle.
Hush, ye of little faith.
The shavings fell over the glass and to the floor with no adverse reaction. Bob whistled in admiration.
You know what? Every once in a while you impress me. Today isn't one of those days, but you've done pretty well.
The glass was cool to the touch as I picked it up and put it in the pocket of my robe.
Thanks. I'm going to grab some dinner. Don't wait up.
It didn't take me long to find company on my short walk to the Beetle. Leah showed her usual disregard for the bone-cutting cold in her form-fitting attire, and the snow seemed not to touch her as she glided alongside me in matching step.
So, godson, have you enjoyed my gift?
As much as one can enjoy the she equivalent of a flaming sack of dog turds, I replied. Maybe I can return the favor someday.
Leah laughed with a delicate chime of breaking glass.
What a pity that you cannot see how amusing your threats are. Before I take my leave, might I ask what you intend to do with my gift?
I smiled.
I'm taking it to someone who can appreciate it more. Merry Christmas, Leah.
The fairy vanished from sight, leaving only an echo of her laughter as proof of her presence. Part of me wondered if she knew what I had in mind next, and, if so, if she was simply humoring me. But I pushed those thoughts to the back of my mind as I reached the Beetle and slid into the driver's seat. The Carpenter home stood out like a warm, inviting beacon amongst the other houses nearby. I knew that a huge part of that glow came from the faith that bonded the family together despite whatever the universe, myself included, threw at them. And that as the frequent bringer of trouble, my presence would be objectionable to at least one member of the household. But it was the closest that I had to home tonight, and, as much as I hated to admit it, I kind of needed that. Home. Michael answered the door. He seemed surprised at first to see me standing there, but he nevertheless invited me in. "I'll ask Charity to make a place for you at the table," he said, opening the door wide. "Come in."
"Thanks again."
I followed him into the house, feeling the quiet power of the threshold as I stepped over it.
"I've got a present for you, actually."
Michael accepted the ornament from me with a craftsman's careful hands. I saw the particles of snow inside flash briefly, and then fall dormant, and I felt a pang of relief that my scheme had paid off.
"I should be thanking you. It's beautiful."
Notes by Ozek. I would like to thank the author for the privilege and great pleasure of reading their work, Ornament. I'd also like to thank you for listening to this podfic. You can find Ornament at devil-insider.com/post/10620853374/ornament. Thank you very much.